Well, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm still Robert Winters, and over there in the other corner is?
I'm still Patrick Barrett.
There we go. So I thought maybe I'll just very briefly just sort of mention, you know, right now, the just in terms of the pandemic, I'm not going to show any charts and graphs here. I think I'm just going to skip that here right now. But even though all the wastewater figures, which is supposedly the leading indicator, are actually kind of way up still. Well, actually, they've diminished quite a bit. They're dropping. You know, there's certain indicators that are saying, you know, we still have a real problem. But in fact, the number of cases that are recorded, again, this doesn't include people who are testing at home, so the actual numbers are higher, but they're falling. They're falling and they're looking pretty good. If you actually look at the graph, and I'm not going to show you the graph here right now, what you see is that there was right after Christmas, there was a nice little Christmas bump. It was almost perfect, really. And then it was a little right around New Year's, another bump. And now it's all just skating downhill. And I think that, again, I don't want to be the great Nostradamus about all of this, but I think that, almost 3 years into this, I think there's some reasons for people to start to embrace optimism. You know, this doesn't go away forever, but normalcy seems to be returning pretty solidly right now. So
I'm not going to make any bold comments on that, Robert, other than people can make their own decisions.
Exactly. Now, Patrick, I know that you are actively involved and outspoken and write council letters and whatever on a few things that are before the council that they're taking up under consideration right now. Yep. And we've spoken about it on this program before as well, but I thought maybe we'd get a few little updates on where we stand. So I'm just going to just off the top of my head pick one right now. All right. So the first one was, there was back-to-back petitions calling for the banning of laboratories, you know, in particular areas or pretty much broadly other than industrial areas.
Right.
And I think, have they both, it was a city council petition.
It was the Zondervan McGovern joint petition that was filed in the long-term planning committee of Paul Toner.
And so it was referred to committee so that they wouldn't start the clock.
Correct.
Going ticking for ordinance and planning board. And then there's sort of their other aggressive move where it's called the calendar petition.
The calendar petition, which was a combination of the Cambridge Residents Alliance led by Lee Ferris, as well as Quentin Zondervan's aide, who collected signatures and filed a citizen's petition that went to ordinance and then was referred to the same committee that Toner and Carlone are a part of. The difference there is that the petition is still active and technically a default moratorium on lab developments in the areas that are affected.
Right. So at this point, is it fair to say that the cooler heads are now just sort of taking these two sort of together as sort of a common process, even though they are distinct petitions?
Or am I
getting that wrong?
I think in theory, I think Paul and Carlone both kind of have a much steadier hand on the wheel of where this is going. However, you know, the fact that the citizens petition wasn't voted down to me was somewhat disappointing. It kind of says, you know, let's forget about the content of the petition, but the way that it was done, like the city council deals with an issue, you don't like the outcome, so you file a petition the next week to usurp that process, I think denies everybody in the city process, denies everybody in the city and the council itself its ability to adjudicate any one issue. So I think just as a precedent, I would have voted it down at the orders given. So I would have sent it to the council with a negative recommendation so the council could vote it down appropriately the following week or 2 weeks afterwards. By doing this, they kind of are saying, you know, we understand you guys are really concerned and we're going to try to work with you. But the interesting pieces of this is coming from the Cambridge Residents Alliance, which I know those folks pretty well. I know Lee pretty well. These are the same people who only 6 years ago were protesting the development of housing on a lab site and threatening to sue, hiring attorneys, creating friends of neighborhood coalitions. And of course, I'm talking about Mass and Maine. And to me, it's terribly inconsistent to say that we want to ban labs for housing, but in the same breath, we're the same group who was blocking housing that was going on a lab.
So one thing I think is worth noting is that there seems to be a presumption. It's kind of like you might call a false dichotomy, which is that, you know, if you say no labs, then therefore housing will flourish.
Right.
Or if you would say no housing, therefore labs would flourish. I don't really think that economic development and development in general is so binary as that.
It isn't, and it's unfortunate that we don't have, you know, people who are, you know, in positions to actually help guide this conversation, be a little bit more forthright in their understanding of how this works. But, you know, in Central Square, Harvard Square, Porter Square, and the other areas this petition affects, housing hasn't really been flourishing for decades. And it's not because of a lab, the ability to build labs, because labs have also not proliferated really in most of these districts. And I think much like a line from Shakespeare, like what's in a lab? You know, the labs that we have in Central Square, and we've got a few of them, what happens in those facilities is not terribly different than what happens in an office or in the bathroom of your home. And I think that there's some real confusion right now. And it's unfortunate because it's the worst possible time. We're fresh off the pandemic. The Boston Globe just had an article this morning about how offices are tanking, vacancies at a 30-year high. You know, a lot of these office buildings can't be, you know, waived into residential housing, but labs are in a way could be the salvation for some of these business districts, because the people who work in labs have to come in. And a lot of these labs are doing the kind of work that honestly is astounding. I didn't know much about the subject in Central Square in my own district until I did a bit of a deep dive to find out what kind of work that they're doing. I didn't know we had two fusion laboratories. We have companies that are working on embodied carbon, the companies that are working on improving solar, companies that are working on turning, using photosynthesis to create chemical reactions. We have a company that's working on a carbon-free concrete. And I'm like, what a weird moment in time where we have a bunch of people trying to block the things that might actually wind up saving our planet. That might, instead of Budo, which we'll get to, or lab bans or gas bans or any of this nonsense, like we're actively saying no to the very people who might find us a way out of here. Because we can recycle, Robert, we can compost, we can, you know, maybe switch our stoves to induction or get our electric or whatever. But like Cambridge is 6.3 square miles. And even the entire United States produces what, like 20% of the greenhouse gases in the world. Like the only way out of this is work, innovation, and building, not austerity and hiding in a hole.
And on the specifics of the proposed lab ban, you know, again, with I think it's debatable whether anybody's ever even trying to really make a proper definition of a lab here, by the way, but. You know, let's assume that there's at least some effort was made. I don't really believe that, but let's assume, right? To me, it seems many ways that if you're basically trying to argue whether you should or you should either have no labs and therefore housing will somehow miraculously appear, or vice versa, I think what you're really doing is you're sort of having the wrong conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there is a legitimate conversation to be had about potential conflicts, you know, which have actually happened in the past between laboratory uses or even brightly lit buildings and adjacent, you know, and neighbors, right?
You're talking about lighting, you're talking about nuisance laws that we don't really enforce too much.
Yeah, you could talk about potential danger. You know, is this a laboratory where you're going to be doing particular sort of scary work?
That issue even, you know, your good friend Quentin Zondervan has said that that's not really the issue at hand. We have BSL-1 and BSL-2, biosafety level 1, biosafety level 2 labs that aren't really doing the crazy bad stuff. And like, I've toured a few labs in East Cambridge. I've toured some of the labs in Central Square. And like, they're not, you know, terribly different from any kind of office space. There's some more gizmos and gadgets. They might take some samples of blood or stool, but like, you know, BioBot is a great example. Like, I didn't know what BioBot was until the pandemic. And the wastewater numbers you're quoting right now are from BioBot.
Yeah, I actually look up the BioBot data every single day.
You should stop doing that, but I love you.
I'm starting to look forward to a day when I actually won't even feel like I need to, because
I'm worried about the COVID anxiety more than anything else right now. I think people need to.
Let me tell you, I'm sort of a bit of a data guy. I actually find understanding is actually what keeps me calm and sane. So rather than sort of having fear of the unknown, if you actually can look at data and say, okay, things are getting a little better, things are a little getting worse, and you sort of track it, you go, oh, I think I have a handle on this. I understand it better.
And I'm more of a caveman, Robert. I just eat and then I feel better.
Well, I've been known to do a little bit of that myself. By the way, there was some, in years past, not so recently, I remember there was arguments back, even going back 20 years, Kathy Bourne, even 20 plus years ago, on the city council about rooftop mechanicals. That was all the rage once upon a time, yeah. You know, because there was noise or other problems associated with these things. So there was some efforts to regulate rooftop mechanicals, you know, sound buffers, you know, all these sorts of things, you know, practical things that basically minimize the conflict between a particular use such as a lab use and residential neighbors. It makes total sense that you should have that conversation.
But there's a discussion post COVID that we have to talk about in terms of creating safer, cleaner, healthier buildings that also will require, you know, air cyclings, different types of ventilation techniques, different types of filters. I wanted just to interject this one piece about BioBot before we conclude that piece of the conversation. They were kicked out of Somerville. They had a lab in Somerville because of regulations in Somerville, because it's run entirely by socialists. By the way,
you're completely correct.
They came to Cambridge because we allowed that use in Central Square in the engine. Now think about that for just one second. If we had passed this lab ban, BioBot would not have found a home. And BioBot's founder, you know, spoke at our last meeting saying just that, that but for Cambridge, they would never have been able to find the funding to do their work. And we would not have these wastewater numbers that we're looking to as a, you know, safety warning system for when these bad things are coming. I mean,
that's
a real world example I can give.
Right. And it is perhaps worth emphasizing that now that people are doing self-testing for COVID at home so much, all of the previous metrics that were used to measure, you know, incidents or even the number of cases, it's really kind of shabby data now, even though I follow it still every day, but it's shabby data. But the wastewater data is, you know, it's truth. It is factual.
And the whole conversation to me is depressing, because I look at like the concerns that people have and try to pair them up with their solutions. And I'm just thinking, if you truly want to save the planet, we should be doubling down, tripling down. If you do this kind of work, XYZ, we should be funding it. We should be sponsoring it. We should be creating buildings for you to do it. And we should be providing the innovations for the world to bring us out of this mess, because those are the only things. That's the only way out, is through innovation.
And I will add to that, just to say, I personally feel a level of civic pride, the fact that some of these endeavors, you know, listen, Moderna's here, yeah. You know, Pfizer has a heavy duty presence. I mean, these are the primary players.
Old Furnace, Massachusetts, was the home of BioBot, they wouldn't have a big sign that said Old Furnace, the home of BioBot.
Exactly. Now the other issue which you alluded to, I lump it all together under the code name BUDO, you know, right. Building Energy Use Disclosure Ordinance, which is in fact not about disclosure now at all. No. It's really more an effort by some parties to have building energy use regulated and install mandates on you know, what certain buildings must do.
Robert, it's about creating another way to tax property owners to fund programs that the council wants to fund. That's what it's about. It's all about.
But But now that you know, which sort of, I think that dovetails a little bit into, or maybe a lot, into something that came up at the last city council meeting, which was that the a communication of the city manager having to do with whether the city wants to adopt, or at least first discuss and then eventually adopt, stretch energy codes or what's the other alternative called? It's the
special stretch energy code, and then there's
special
the
code. Specialized code.
The specialized net stretch energy code is really, we call it net zero stretch code, which will require buildings to go all electric. If they want to still have gas piping in their building or required to, they have to still wire for whatever future systems and upgrades might be available at a later date, should they not exist currently. I think that the idea of presenting information to the city and to the people before we adopt things is a pretty good idea and a pretty good precedent to set. And just like with Buto was happening behind closed doors until March, until, I don't want to give myself more credit than I deserve, but like until like maybe two or three of us were like, whoa, wait a second. We need to be part of this conversation as well. We were not involved at all.
Well, so you know, like, when I saw the that item on the January 9th city council agenda, I immediately said, okay, so the way it was, there was a city council order that went with it. It basically says, let's adopt this like right now, you know? And there was an actual discussion on the city council floor about saying, well, wait a minute, hold on. Nobody in the city knows about this. Nobody knows what the repercussions are. Nobody knows what the cost implications are. And you have a couple of city councilors basically saying, quick, let's pass this before anybody knows about it.
Go back and look at all of the Buto presentation, or the last Buto presentation. CDD listed that stretch code as part of their plan to reach net zero by 2050 and 2035, depending on where what camp you're in. So the city has been working on it. The CDD knows about it, but there's been no disclosure.
Zero. And they actually asked one of the counselors, asked flat out, Iram Farouk, head of community development department. I think it was Denise Simmons asked her straight up. Says, so could you tell us how much outreach about this, which will affect people, how much of the outreach has actually taken place to date? And she said, none.
She a moment of honesty.
Said none.
Kudos to our assistant director for saying that. I mean, I think that was the biggest issue we had with Buto, and they're like, no. We told Google and Microsoft and MIT, and I was like, that's right. Great.
but you know, in a way, I mean, I don't want to put this all on COVID, and this sort of the public participation in government process seems to be so relegated to Zoom. You know, but you know, the truth is that when
wouldn't that make it easier to disclose things?
You know, you would think it would make it easier to disclose.
I could sit here in my bar with a martini and be like, oh, tell me something.
But it also makes it easier to rush things through without disclosure. Yeah. You know, because you know, there's a different kind of participation that takes place in a kind of a Zoomy world.
There's obsession. There's this obsession with Cambridge being a leader and everything. And I think I want to take a look at the definition of that word, because I don't think the council, or the councilors who keep claiming this, fully understand what leadership is.
I will agree with you rather strongly on that as well. Leadership doesn't mean quick, let's pass something before Somerville does.
It doesn't mean being first.
It doesn't mean being first.
And I think with things that we're talking about right now that actually have a significant economic impact on people, like you have city councilors who are promising condo owners that, don't you worry, we're gonna exempt you from Buto. And I'm like, don't think for a second. Divide and conquer is that strategy. They're kicking, they'll put commercial in a silo, and then once that's passed, they're coming after you. And then once that happens, no, commercial is out of the picture. We don't care. Good luck, residential. But ultimately, the bigger picture, like, what are we trying to accomplish? If I rip out all of my energy systems in my building and replace them with electric tomorrow, have we pushed the needle on climate change at all? Of course not. If Cambridge pushes to the front of the line, become net zero by 2035, and we screw over two other states and the rest of the Commonwealth by usurping 40% of Eversource's budget for our own demands, have we done anything other than exert our privilege on the rest of the Commonwealth and two other states? for 6.2 square miles. Shameful. Well,
and let's also not forget to mention that energy generation is still largely, at least here, is something that's done with fossil fuels.
Exactly right.
Right. So what you're really doing is you're simply you're tucking away the fossil fuel usage into a remote location, perhaps, you know, the power plant. But, you know, so you say, okay, great, we don't use gas in this building here, but they sure as heck using it at the power generation.
But you do.
Right. Yeah. You know, and you know, I mean, there is a sort of, I suppose, a legitimate point you could make about chicken and egg, you know. So well, let's, if we do all of this here, then somehow the electric generation, the power generation industry is going to somehow respond and come up with all the right solutions.
Oh, they responded all right with
green.
Good luck. And I think the thing that kind of annoys me about it really is, like, you know, we're talking about gas stoves became a national conversation all of a sudden. And like, I'm like, oh, we've been talking about that in Cambridge for a couple of weeks now. You know, with the gas ban coming, you know, it shifted from being the green alternative to now, you know, stoves basically are the cause, leading cause of asthma in children. And I'm like, okay. You know, so pick a lane and where you want to go with it. But like, it seems like there's just a desperate effort to create some kind of change that seems almost superficial in nature. That, you know, if I rip out my gas stove, which I love and I'm never ripping out, by the way, and replace it with induction and run a 220 line and go through that process, that somehow I've accomplished anything. And the answer is you haven't. So, like, you know, this is, to me, is like, is you got city councilors acting like state legislators. And, you know, we have state legislators already. We should be rising as the Commonwealth to reach a better tomorrow, not banning the innovators in our city who will build the technology, not making me rip out systems that are brand new in a building that just a week ago ISD was like stamp approved. We should be working for a bigger solution to a big problem. And then instead of just trying to give people like a little merit badge for, you know, mission accomplished Cambridge, we're green, screw the rest of the state.
Well, you know, it's, there's a, just a, just a little bit of a kind of a side story when I think about recycling. In recycling, you know, which was, you know, before people talked about energy and this and that, that was sort of like the green thing once upon a time, right? You know, it's been a while, but it was. And it was all about like encouraging people to recycle. In many ways, people still talk about it. Let's encourage people to recycle. We got to like, get our numbers up there. You know, we're gonna hit the, you know, like at this, at the amusement park where you hit the thing and hit, you know, the thing runs up and hits the bell. Like, yes, we hit such and such a percentage. But the, you know, as people I know who are working in the industry have always pointed out, I said, you know, you're not recycling when you're putting stuff in a blue bin. You're collecting. You're not recycling until that product is actually being remanufactured into other things. So there's this whole web of industry and usage and economics that has to actually go along with it, you know? And that I think about that sometimes when people talk about, you know, forcing certain changes, you know, because for green purposes. But in fact, if, for example, if electricity generation is still being done by fossil fuels, tell me, what have you actually done? All you've done is just changed your stove.
I agree. And I think this, to some degree, there's this sense of like, we have to do something. And I can appreciate that. This is an emergency. We should be doing things to get us to a better place. But the problem with this emergency, much like even with the COVID emergency we just went through, the technology is evolving and we need to wait. We need to be patient. We need to, don't burn your garbage in your backyard. Don't do that. You know, recycle, compost, try to do what you can do. But know that the true path to getting us into a better tomorrow is work, innovation, and building. And until those things are, until the innovation part catches up, we're still living in the Stone Ages, brother.
Well, and we're also sometimes living in faith. Like, how many times have we heard people say, what? They were able to hold sustained diffusion for 0.2 nanoseconds. You know, like we're on the verge of limitless energy. So don't you know, we better just get ready for it because it's coming. That may happen one day, you know, but it ain't happening tomorrow. Nope. And I'm grateful for all the researchers who are, by the way, working in labs. All right.
Fusion, Central Square Company.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there may be absolutely just demonstrably better ways of doing power generation down the road.
But I'm way more optimistic, Robert, because there will be. There will be.
I don't doubt it.
That better tomorrow doesn't change if I rip out my Navien gas water heaters that I just installed tomorrow. It doesn't even move the dial.
I know. I mean, sometimes we perhaps overuse the word virtue signaling, but you know, in some respects, it is that case. It's like, I want the world to know that I've got the induction oven on, because now I'm the most wonderful Cambridge person on the block.
Cambridge has taken virtue signaling to Olympic levels.
I know. and I, you know, one of the joys I had of having been involved in recycling is that I got introduced to industry people and kind of learned the bigger picture. And I think I am grateful for that, you know. And I think the same thing is true here when you talk about electricity generation, whatever is you've got to look a little bit bigger than just, you know, doing the righteous thing at your home or forcing somebody else to do the righteous thing in their home.
It's work. We don't like doing it anymore. We need to get back to a place in time where we understand that, like, we are part of a continuum of humanity. We pass the next generation. And unless we're willing to commit to that better future by working, innovating, and building, we're screwed.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and in other words, you know, I'm going to say it flat out. The capitalists are not the enemy here. They're your partners.
We're your best friggin' hope. We're your best.
Get used to it. Just get used to it. Embrace it. You know,
it's like the great Dave Chappelle once said, like, you know, you're going to have to accept imperfect allies.
I can
think of no one more imperfect than myself.
Except for me. So we're down to our last 10 seconds anyway. So, again, it was another good time tonight here. So we'll see you again in a few weeks on Cambridge Inside Out.